I was shocked. Things just didn't add up.
It was the last place you'd expect to find a gruesome crime scene. The quiet neighborhood, the lovely home, this friendly couple.
I think it's hard not to have loved Tammy.
They were very happy, very happy.
It seemed to be a simple case of a robbery gone horribly wrong.
He realized that she was dead or dying.
But nothing about this case was simple. Not the marriage and not the murders.
It just kept getting more red flags come up.
The surprises just kept on coming.
He said, you know, can I talk to you in private?
What dark force claimed two lives?
I feel like she's still there. I still feel her with me.
Life seems to move just a little slower in South Carolina. Afternoons in Columbia can be spent on the meandering Saluda River or nearby Lake Murray. And tucked away inside this capital city is Ascot Estates, where old Southern charm mingles with new money. Not much in the way of drama here. Until April 2012, Friday the 13th, when something sinister happened.
I immediately turned on the news and saw that there had been a double murder.
You're totally confused because there is no way of knowing for sure what's going on.
It was my husband who called me and said something terrible had happened. And I said, what happened?
What happened would become the center of a mystery, a whodunit that began with a frantic 911 call.
Who shot your wife?
A friend of mine, Brian.
Is he still there?
The call came from a most unusual place, the gracious home of well-liked husband and wife, Brett and Tammy Parker. The Parkers were a golden couple, each with their own special gifts. Tammy was raised in a small town near Columbia, but left to go into sales, where she was immediately successful. Best friend, Angela Leon.
I think it's hard not to have loved Tammy. She's vibrant and outgoing and full of life, full of energy, always positive.
Did she turn heads?
Tammy was the kind of person that she didn't even notice that she was turning heads.
During one of Tammy's sales calls, she met Columbia businessman Ben Staples. They became close friends.
Could Tammy sell anything?
She could sell anything. It's just her personality. Everyone liked her.
And Tammy had something else that set her apart. Talent.
And I can't remember exactly the first time I heard her sing, but I was amazed. Amazed at how great she was.
Tammy sang with a local band, Jumpstart. Woody Woodward was lead guitarist and one of her biggest fans.
Voices like that are just gifts. Somebody gives you that from above.
Friends thought she could take her talent big time, but Tammy seemed happy to remain in Columbia. One of her gigs was at her friend Ben Staples' annual barbecue.
Is this Tammy's stage?
Well, yeah, she enjoyed this. Tammy was an entertainer. She didn't just stand up there and sing.
Along the way, in 1996, Tammy met and married a local boy, Brett Parker, a medical supply salesman. He'd been a star athlete in high school. His aunt, Sandra Hunter, says he was always throwing some kind of ball.
He played football and softball and baseball, and he was an All-American kid.
An injury sidelined any thoughts of a career in professional sports, so Brett took up amateur softball. That's how he met one of his closest friends, Howdy Bear.
No doubt, Brett was one of the best softball players I ever played with.
When Tammy came into the picture, Bear knew his friend had found his match.
Tammy, she was just precious, and I'll never forget that, but I knew they was going to get married. It was just a matter of time.
Howdy and his wife tagged along with Brett to Tammy's singing gigs and saw a lucky man in love.
They were fun to be around. No doubt in my mind, he loved her.
Both Tammy's friends and Brett's family agreed. The couple just clicked.
Did they seem like a good fit for each other?
They seemed to do well together. They seemed to have some of the same, you know, dreams and ambitions.
Did you like Tammy?
Oh, I loved her.
They had two children, born 8 years apart, and in the spring of 2012, the family in upscale Ascot Estates appeared to be living a charmed existence. Then came the afternoon of April 13th, and that call to 911. It was Brett Parker.
Please get somebody over here.
Okay, I need you to stay on the phone with me, okay?
Tammy was dead, and there was more. Someone else lay dead in that house. It was a double murder, a cold-blooded crime that would look more chilling with each new detail.
Coming up, whose was the other body found inside that house? Police learned it was someone Brett and Tammy knew well.
One of the first questions I asked him was, what was his relationship with this man? And he said, you know, can I talk to you in private?
When Dateline continues.
This bucolic southern town had suddenly become the scene of a deadly crime.
Please get somebody over here.
Okay, I need you to stay on the phone with me, okay?
Home security video shows Brett Parker calling 911 outside his house, collapsing on the ground as he describes what happened. A violent robbery that left his wife dead.
Listen to me. I understand you are very upset, but is your wife, is she breathing?
No.
And there was more to the story. Brett had killed the perpetrator in self-defense.
I shot him. I think I killed him.
Veteran investigator Stan Smith headed to the scene.
What is your first interaction with Brett Parker?
He was sort of heavy breathing. Then at one point in time, he lays down on his back as if he's, you know, suffering in almost pain.
Inside, Stan Smith walked into a gruesome scene. The body of Brett's wife, Tammy, was in a bathroom. And lying nearby was a man named Brian Kapnerhurst, dead in an alcove not far from the safe where Brett kept his money.
Started with Tammy Parker. It appeared that she was seated at the desk in this office area, and that the shooter shot her from the back, half of her torso inside the bathroom and half her legs out into the office area. So she definitely tried to flee. As far as Brian Kapnerhurst, he was found slumped over on his right side. He was shot multiple times in the face, in the chest, in the arm, in the side, in the legs, in the foot.
The investigators were surprised when Brett told them Brian Kapnerhurst, the man he had shot, was a family friend and frequent visitor to the house. In fact, Brett said he was in the bathroom when Brian arrived for a meeting and he told him to just go upstairs and wait. Suddenly, Brett heard shots.
He ran upstairs and was greeted at the top of the stairs by Brian Kapnerhurst holding a gun on him and ordered him to the safe, which was in an alcove area in an attic. As he walked by the office, he saw his wife's legs and he surmised that she'd been shot. He was taken to this alcove area. And on the way, he realized or recalled that he had a gun hidden on the safe there in that area. And he said he made a decision as he knelt at gunpoint to grab the gun and try to get to Kapnerhurst before Kapnerhurst shot him, basically.
So he turned around and caught Brian off guard.
That's the way he explained it.
By shooting him.
Right. And he said he ran to check on his wife and realized that she was dead or dying. And then he went and called 911.
Police recovered two guns from the scene. Brett's .410 revolver, the gun he kept on his safe and used to shoot Brian. In Brian's hand, police found a 9mm pistol that had been used to kill Tammy. Near Brian's body was his open gym bag with ammo and an empty magazine clip clearly visible on top. To investigators, it looked like Brett Parker had fought for his life, shot a man in self-defense, and had just lost his beautiful wife. The big question was why? Why would such a good friend turn on them?
One of the first questions I asked him was, what was his relationship with this man? He said, you know, can I talk to you in private? And that's when he told me that he was a sports bookie.
Brett worked a day job as a full-time medical salesman, but on the side, he had been a sports bookie for years.
Everybody knew that.
Did it concern you, or was it just...
Every small town has a bookie. That's something I didn't even think about.
And Brett was not the Sopranos break-your-leg-style bookie.
Was Brett a gentle bookie?
Oh, very, very. Everybody says that he delivered his money. Brett was good. He was a good bookie.
Brett also told investigators that Brian Kapnerhurst, the man he had just shot and killed, was in the bookie business too. As a matter of fact, he worked for Brett. Brian was also an unlikely bookie. A former high school athlete, he was a family man who worked for a county recreation commission and coached kids' sports teams. Tammy had spoken kindly of him.
I think she thought he was a nice guy. I mean, I think she must have thought a lot because he was in her home with her children around. And Tammy was very protective of her children.
And I think he trusted her.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, Tammy had always looked out for him, you know, getting an extra lunch for him, taking care of him.
But investigators found out there'd been a problem in that bookie business, and it all boiled down to money. Brett owed Brian a good chunk of the profits, $20,000, and he'd been slow to pay up.
Brian was going to go over there basically and tell Brett, look, I've had enough of the excuses. I want my money.
Smith learned that Brian Kapnerhurst had money problems, so it looked like he went to the Parkers to demand money he was owed and take whatever else was in the safe. Tammy had simply been in the wrong place at the wrong time.
What do you miss most about Tammy?
Her laugh. Just her being. She'd always call. She always made sure we had our girls' nights out. We haven't done that since she was killed.
It was all so sad. The Parkers, with their children, had just returned from a family cruise, tanned and smiling. A relative on that cruise told Brett's aunt, Sandra Hunter, it had been a wonderful trip.
She said that that was the happiest that she had seen Brett and Tammy.
And now Brett's friend saw a man in pain after losing his wife.
He just break down crying, and he would cry all the time.
As for shooting Brian, Howdy believed his friend did what he had to do.
He didn't have no choice. It was either, you know, him or Brian, and that's the way he told us over and over, you know.
To those grieving for Tammy, it seemed that at least there had been some terrible justice for Brian.
People that love Tammy so much, you know, you couldn't help but feel that he maybe people thought he got what he deserved.
Investigators told reporters the tragic deaths were the result of a robbery gone bad. It seemed like a cut and dried case, but things aren't always what they seem.
Coming up.
So there were a series of text messages that were with a young lady, and they were definitely of a sexual nature.
When Dateline continues.
Police had announced the double murder in Gracious Ascot Estates was a robbery gone very wrong. The unlikely intruder, the Parker's family friend, Brian Kapnerhurst. Brett Parker told the investigators that his friend Brian had shot his wife Tammy in a botched robbery attempt. Then Brett, in fear for his own life, killed his friend. It looked like self-defense. But Sheriff Leon Lott knew they couldn't close the case without thoroughly checking out Brett's story.
You know, it was three people there, two of them are dead. So we have to rely on him to explain to us what happened. So we were listening to everything that he was saying, and then we'd go back and check it.
Investigators went over Brett's account, starting with the moment Brian entered the house. Before long, something unusual came to their attention. Brett told police he was sitting on the downstairs toilet when he heard the shots ring out. But one of the female crime scene investigators noticed this. The toilet seat was up.
Our CSI lieutenant is a female, and she made mention of that. That particularly bothered her.
Of course, it takes a woman to notice that,
right?
As they pored over crime scene photos, another small but important detail jumped out. Brian's gym bag with ammunition and an empty magazine clip visible.
The unusual thing about it was those items were found on top of the clothing and the other items in the bag.
Unusual because of what they noticed on the home security video that captured Brian arriving at the house.
And if you looked at the video, the way Brian nonchalantly threw that bag over his shoulder, you would feel like that those items would have gone to the lowest point or the end of the bag. So it was almost like those items had been placed there.
And there was more that didn't seem to quite add up. Investigators took a hard look at the timeline of the crime as Brett described it. That at-home security video showed Brian arriving at Brett's home at 12:31 p.m. Brett called 911 to report having shot Brian at 12:42.
What happened? Who shot your wife?
A friend of mine, Brian.
Police believe the confrontation should have only taken a couple of minutes. So why, they wondered, had Brett taken 9 more minutes to call 911? Police were also curious why, with his wife shot inside, Brett had come outside to make that call.
If it were me, I'd have been inside with my wife, you know, holding my wife. I'm trying to administer CPR and first aid to my wife. And he didn't appear to have any blood on him at all.
Yeah, was that strange that he didn't have blood on him?
It was.
Investigators picked through every detail in Brett's account and found that while he'd been upfront about his illegal bookie business, he wasn't upfront about everything.
And we covered certain things with Brett, like had he been involved in any adulterous affairs, and he told us no. Within the first 24 hours, we found out that wasn't true. And there were a series of text messages that were with a young lady, and they were definitely of a sexual nature, indicative of an affair.
And they started looking at the evidence versus what he had said. And over a period of time, it just kept getting more red flags come up.
Tammy's best friend, Angela Leon, didn't know anything about the investigation, but she had a gut feeling something wasn't right. She called up the sheriff's department to say she thought Brett was lying.
I reached out to them and wanted to make sure they knew that there were people that had a different side of the story.
Brett continued to insist it was self-defense, but within a week of the shooting, he had gotten a lawyer, David Fedor.
The sheriff had told us he thought it was a little odd that Brett retained a defense attorney so quickly when he was saying he was the victim.
Anybody in a situation like that that doesn't retain an attorney immediately needs psychiatric help.
His attorney said Brett was no killer. He was just defending himself after Brian showed up to steal his money.
Kappenhurst went over there specifically to rob the people. Tammy was there. He shot her first, and we assumed he was going to shoot Brett. And Brett got the drop on him instead.
What motive could he have to shoot her?
The motive he would have to shoot her was getting the money out of the safe and have no witnesses.
Why carry out a burglary when you know the wife is home?
Your guess is as good as mine.
I think some people just find that hard to believe.
Sure they do. People find hard to believe that airplanes fly, but it happens.
Brett Parker met directly with Sheriff Leon Lott. He even invited the sheriff to the house to show him the crime scene.
He wanted to walk me through the house to demonstrate what had happened. And after that meeting, we sat at his kitchen table, and at that point was the first time I told him I just didn't believe him.
The sheriff was now convinced that Brett was no victim. He was the mastermind of a cruel and highly unusual plot to kill his wife and frame a friend.
He'd gotten away with this gambling for so many years. What else is he going to get it away with?
3 months after the murders, there was startling news.
The Richland County Sheriff's Department says Parker is lying.
Brett Parker was charged with 2 murders.
Why do you think it took so long?
Because they didn't have a case, is what I thought.
As the case headed to trial, there were no witnesses, no video of the crime, and little forensic evidence pointing to either Brett or Brian as the real killer.
It was a high-profile case, 2 killings in a small town. They wanted to make the most of it.
Coming up, the trial opens with a bombshell. Not about him, but about her.
Did your relationship become more intimate?
When Dateline continues.
In August of 2012, Columbia, South Carolina was reeling from the news that Brett Parker, the only survivor of a tragedy which left 2 people dead, had himself been charged as the cold-blooded killer who masterminded the whole plan. Brett's family and friends believed he was a man wrongly accused.
I just wanted us to know that he was innocent. You know, every time he said, I did not do it.
Even Tammy's close friend, former bandmate Woody Woodward, had a hard time believing Brett was guilty.
You had no reason to doubt Brett, it sounds like.
I believed him. They actually called me and wanted me to be a character witness, and I told them I'd be glad to, because I did not see him doing this.
When the trial began in May, it was a courtroom divided. On one side, Brett's family and friends, including his and Tammy's teenage daughter. On the other side, friends and family of Tammy and Brian sat together. They wore blue, Tammy's favorite color, as a show of unity against the man they believed murdered both victims.
There were shots fired in the home.
In her opening statement, the prosecutor minced no words. Brett Parker had committed a terrible crime, then elaborately covered it up.
As you listen to the details of this case, you will be firmly convinced that it was Brett Parker who not only had the motive, but actually did kill Tammy Parker. And then Brian Kapnerhurst.
Prosecutors wanted the jury to know that the Parker marriage wasn't what it seemed. Brett had strayed, once with an out-of-town woman and several times with a local bank teller. Lindsay Mullins testified that they met, they texted, and that he shared some confidences about his marriage.
He said that he slept upstairs and they slept down, or that she slept downstairs.
But the Parkers had more problems than just Brett's affairs. They called Ben Staples to the stand, a Parker family friend.
How did Tammy feel about her marriage?
Well, as the years went by, she was unhappy. She had conversations. We had conversations regarding religion. Brett did not believe in God and going to church. That was important to her.
Then Ben revealed another bit of evidence about the Parker's shaky marriage. This one, a bombshell.
Did your relationship become more intimate?
Yes.
Approximately how many years ago was that?
About 3 years ago.
And did that end?
It did. It did not end our friendship. We remained best friends until her murder.
The public admission of the affair was a total shock, even to those closest to Tammy.
So this was a secret she kept from her girlfriends?
She did. We always felt like Ben probably loved Tammy, because how could you not love Tammy? And we weren't really, you know, we didn't know Ben that well, so we didn't think that that had happened.
Your opinion,
Lanny Gunter, an old friend and fellow bookie, testified that 4 months before the murders, Brett was talking about a separation.
My advice to him, if he wanted it, was that being that it was coming up on the holidays, for him to try to go home and work it out with Tammy and at least get through the holidays for her kids' sake. And then after the first of the year, for them to try to get back together. And if separating was their option then so be it.
A bad marriage is one thing, murder is another. So prosecutors turned to a different motive, money. Unbeknownst to Tammy, Brett was in deep debt. He had made the biggest mistake a bookie can make. He gambled himself, and Brett wasn't too good at it. Gunter told an investigator Brett owed him big money.
I just told him about the debt that Brett and I had individually, his own account, the $100,000 or $101,000.
And this was not the first time Brett's gambling had been a serious issue.
Brett had been caught several years before in a great amount of debt, and it nearly caused a divorce then. His father bailed him out. It was about $100,000.
The state tried to convince the jury that killing Tammy had been Brett's way out of a shaky marriage and his gambling debt. Tammy had taken out a life insurance policy.
$868,000 was the ultimate amount.
And who was the beneficiary listed on that?
Brett.
Tammy also had close to $200,000 in a 401k. Combined with the insurance, nearly $1.1 million, all left to Brett.
What kind of man sets up his friend to take the fall for murdering his wife, and then he murders the friend and leaves him with the legacy of, you know, that he murdered somebody?
He wanted to perpetuate this lifestyle. He wanted to continue to gamble. He wanted to enjoy the girlfriends. And Tammy was a hindrance to him. He felt like this was his way out.
In court, the ugly accusation seemed to get to Brett. As the medical examiner testified about Tammy's fatal injuries, Brett said he felt ill and was rushed to the hospital. Brett was back, however, the next day to hear the prosecution present evidence it said proved he planned the murders, framed his friend, and then covered it up. Here's how they said he did it. First, he shot and killed his wife in that upstairs office. Then, at 12:25 p.m., Brett's own home security camera catches someone peering through the blinds. Prosecutors believe it was Brett waiting for Brian to arrive for a meeting Brett himself had arranged. Gunshot residue was found on those blinds. proof, the state said, that Brett had already fired a gun before Brian even arrived.
At 12:25, who's that picking out the blinds? I mean, that was somebody, in our opinion, who had just done this heinous thing and was nervously awaiting his patsy or his fall guy to show up.
After killing Brian, his fall guy, prosecutors said Brett staged the crime scene and planted that gym bag and ammunition.
I guess the idea was that was supposed to be some kind of murder bag.
And placed the gun he'd used to kill his wife in Brian's hand. There's no way Brian brought that gun to Brett's house, a friend testified.
Did you know whether Brian had a gun?
Not no, but heck no, he did not have a gun. Brian was scared of guns. There is no way on this earth that Brian Captenhurst had a pistol. None. Zero. It did not happen.
And there was something else.
That gunshot to the forearm.
Brian Captenhurst had suffered a major gunshot wound to his arm, but he was still clutching the gun as he lay dead on the floor. A medical examiner testified it's unlikely the gun would have stayed in his hand.
In my medical opinion, based on the shots to the arm, to the forearm and falling over, I believe that the gun fell out of his hand.
The gun had been placed in his hand.
The prosecution had made its case. Now it was time for the defense to fight back.
They had no proof whatsoever that he shot his wife. It was completely circumstantial.
The defense was about to tell the jury that Brian Captenhurst, not Brett Parker, was the real villain.
Coming up, Brett's team produces a powerful witness to back up his story, his teenage daughter.
I was there and I remember.
When Dateline continues.
Brett Parker had declared a resounding not guilty to the murder of his wife Tammy and friend Brian Captenhurst. From the day it happened to this moment in court, he insisted that he was the innocent victim of a robbery gone bad.
And who shot your wife?
A friend of mine, Brian.
Is he still there?
I shot him. I think I killed him.
Defense attorney David Fedor said the accusation that Brett plotted to kill his wife and then framed his friend was too far-fetched to believe.
I think Brett is a fine young man. He's not a genius. It would have taken an Einstein to set this thing up.
Would it take a genius, though, to concoct a plan like that?
I think I'm fairly bright, and I'll be damned if I could have thought it up.
Brian Captenhurst fired that handgun.
In court, Brett Parker's attorneys said Brian Captenhurst was a desperate man with far more motive for murder.
A man that was at the end of his rope, who had a desire for money and a plan for violence. And the evidence in this case is going to prove it.
Still, the defense thought it had an uphill battle. Fedor knew it didn't help his case that his client was an unfaithful husband and gambler.
They showed he was a bad man because he gambled. He had an affair. They said that was another thing that showed he was a murderer. It was just ludicrous.
From the start, Fedor and co-counsel Mark Whitlark wanted the jury to know that, okay, sure, Brett, a gambler himself, was deep in debt, but he was in debt to an old friend he'd known since he was 15.
And you weren't worried about that, were you?
I've never been worried about Brett.
As a matter of fact, if he had called you and said, look, I'm having a problem, you would have wiped the whole thing clean for it, wouldn't you?
We would have worked something out, yes, sir.
Sure, sure. And you never put any pressure on him, or if you called him up, I'm going to come get you or something, right?
No, sir.
And that life insurance policy the prosecution suggested was a smoking gun? The insurance agent testified Brett wasn't even all that interested in a policy on Tammy.
Did you attempt to sell him insurance on his wife?
Yes.
Tammy, were you successful in selling him insurance to his wife?
I was not.
Tammy had taken out the insurance on her own, and instead of claiming a dime for himself, Brett had already signed the insurance money over to his kids.
Did he tell you directly, Mr. Spell, that he wanted this money to go to the children?
Yes.
And remember those downstairs blinds?
the ones with the gunshot residue the prosecution said had been left by Brett before Brian even arrived?
Proof that he killed Tammy ahead of time and then looked through the blinds to see Brian coming.
They stated that, but they didn't prove that.
A defense expert suggested the fine particles had merely drifted to that blind even days later.
If you have an air handling system like we have in most buildings and houses, over a period of time, it will be sucked through the intakes and distributed fairly evenly through a place.
And that curious matter of the toilet seat being up when logically it should have been down.
And that's the bathroom that the defendant indicated he was in.
Yes. Objection, Your Honor. I move to have that stricken.
When the prosecution tried to enter that as evidence in court, the defense successfully objected. Brett's attorney told us it was just a family habit to leave the toilet seat up to make things easier for their young son.
He has a 6-year-old child. Every time the child comes in from school or anyplace else, he runs to the bathroom right away. Brett and his wife always put the seat up.
He hears shots fired in his house and he's going to think about putting the toilet seat up?
It's an automatic reaction if you do it every day.
It was explainable behavior. The motive was flimsy, said the defense. Now it attacked the state's forensic evidence. The defense used the amount of gunshot residue found on Brett's hands to undermine the theory that Brett had shot his wife with one gun and his friend with another, arguing there just wasn't enough gun residue on his hands to have fired both weapons.
If he fired both the 9mm and the 410 revolver in combination, I would expect his levels to be very high.
All right, well, what did you find in this case, sir?
Well, his levels are consistent with someone who has fired a firearm, certainly, but they're not extremely high.
And the defense argued that Brian did have gunshot residue on his hands, proving he could have killed Tammy.
Certainly, that's not the only way in which gunshot residue can be had, but it is consistent with firing a gun.
And there was the prosecution's theory that the gun in Brian's hand had been placed there after his death, that he could never have held on to it after being shot himself.
The state claims that it would have been impossible for Brian to have that gun in his hand, given that the severe injury that he sustained to his arm.
That was hogwash. Many, many people have a death grip. If you're shot and you've got something in your hand, you squeeze it tighter.
And the idea that Brian would never have had a gun? A friend of Brett's, Robert Bauer, says that's just not true. He wasn't asked to tell this story in court, but says that a month before the killings, he was at the Parker home and saw Brian handling one of Brett's guns with ease.
He took all the bullets out and the clip and handed me that one and then handed me a revolver, which he had took the bullets out. And then I hear his friend say that he would never touch a gun.
Brett told investigators he'd given Brian that 9mm handgun for protection. And in a dramatic move, the defense brought in a witness to confirm that, Brett and Tammy's 14-year-old daughter, Brooke.
Brian and my dad were discussing a gun that my dad had. And they were just talking about how they thought it was good for him to have safety at his house and to protect Brian's family. So,
you were talking about Mr. Kapner?
Yes, sir.
Having young Brooke Parker testify was controversial, but Brett's aunt knew Brooke believed her father was innocent and wanted to take the stand.
She had some information that needed to be given, and she did what she felt like she needed to do.
She wanted the jury to hear her story, no matter how difficult it was to tell.
I witnessed them talking about how he was giving a gun to Brian. I'm not lying about that. I was there and I remember.
It was a tragedy that had stirred up the quiet waters of this Carolina community. And soon a jury would have to decide who was to blame. But before they did, the defense wanted them to hear from the only person alive who really knew what happened in the house that day. Brett Parker himself.
Coming up.
Did you ever have a plan to shoot and kill your wife?
Never hurt her. I would never hurt Tim.
But would the jury believe him?
As to the charge of the murder of Tammy Parker, we, the jury, unanimously find the defendant.
When Dateline continues.
What really happened inside that Ascot Estates home? In court, Brett Parker confidently took the stand, eager to tell his version of events. First, he wanted the jury to know his marriage was hardly the wreck the prosecution made it out to be.
Me and Tammy got along fine. We put our kids before everything. I know that's why I could never go to her and ask for separation, because it would just destroy our kids.
And he explained his initial reticence to tell police about his affairs or reveal his own massive gambling debts had nothing to do with the murders.
When they asked me about the affair, and I admitted it to them that next day. And as far as the gambling goes, if you know bookmakers, it's not something you just talk about.
Then, struggling to keep his emotions in check, he recounted the day of the shooting.
Brian was standing there with a gun pointed at me and told me to go to the safe. And I walked up the steps. I mean, I didn't know what was going on. I was panicked. I kept asking, why? What are you doing? And as we walked by the office, I could see Tammy's feet sticking out of the bathroom. And then I knew something was wrong, bad. That he had probably shot her.
When you shot Captain Hurst, did you have any fear in your mind at that time?
Yeah, I'm scared. Yeah, but when I got to that safe, I made a decision right then that it's going to be me or him.
Ultimately, the defense wanted the jury to see that while a flawed man, Brett Parker was no killer.
Did you shoot in self-defense, Captain Hurst?
Yes, I did.
Did you ever have a plan, a premeditated plan, to shoot and kill your wife?
No, that wasn't...
Under cross-examination, Brett held firm, sticking to the story he first told investigators.
Did you think it was important to tell the police the truth?
I did tell him the truth. I've told him what's happened in that house, and that is the truth. And I believe, as I see it, the evidence proves it.
And when the prosecutor pressed him about his infidelities, Brett insisted his feelings for Tammy never wavered.
You testified you love Tammy. You still love her to this day.
I do. I'll love her to the day.
Love her forever.
I will.
Despite their troubles, Brett said the love for Tammy was always there.
But you would never do anything to hurt her.
Never hurt her. I would never hurt Tammy. Never had.
It was time for closing arguments in the case of the people versus Brett Parker.
I ask you, with all my heart and all the love and faith I have in our jury system, to send Brett back to his family. Don't let this injustice continue.
Brett Parker is no victim. He is a greedy, selfish, entitled, and while yes, maybe even charming at times, manipulative killer.
Then the case was in the hands of the jury.
What's the mood like?
I told my wife, I said, if it's short, I said, I'm not gonna feel good. I said, unless they take a while.
In just 3 hours, they were back. In the divided courtroom, the families of Tammy, Brian, and Brett prepared to hear Brett's fate.
As to the charge of the murder of Tammy Parker, we, the jury, unanimously find the defendant guilty. As to the charge of the murder of Brian Kappenhurst, we, the jury, unanimously find the defendant guilty.
When you heard the word guilty, what were you thinking?
Thank God. It's sad. It's not the outcome any of us wanted. Tammy's not back, you know. Now Brooke has no father. But thank God he didn't get away with it.
Brett's sentence, read immediately, was life behind bars.
Oh, it just was like, God, I've lost a friend. You know, I've lost one of my best friends. is very emotional.
Does that weigh heavy on you, knowing he'll be behind bars for life?
Well, certainly it weighs heavily on me. I'm an Irishman. Anything weighs heavily on me. But that, and especially because I've defended many people that I knew were guilty, this is one I thought was not guilty.
Tammy's friends keep her memory alive, in part through her music. In the fall of 2012, Ben Staples held his annual barbecue as a tribute to Tammy.
Will it ever be the same without her?
We will continue, but it obviously won't be the same without Tammy Jo.
Things are settling down again here in this quiet southern town. The healing has begun for the families and friends of both victims.
I know Tammy's in heaven. She was very strong in her convictions, and she always said that. She always said to us, I don't know about Brett, but I know I'll be in heaven. I feel like she's around. I feel her presence. I can hear her. She's still there. I still feel her with me. I dream about her a lot.
That's all for now. I'm Lester Holt. Thanks for joining us.